Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, last hour of the week. John Granato gets back next week, and he'll be here on Monday. Supposed to be, at least. We'll see if he gets back from Prague.
Well, the Czech Republic, where he is, has shut down flights, their airspace to Russia. So, I mean, I think he can still fly to the U.S., but any Russian planes, like, commercial airlines.
If John was chilling in Russia, we're going to know if he's involved in any of this stuff. Because he gets it feels like John's involved in a lot of stuff. He knows a lot of scurrilous people. So we got to keep an eye on John.
Well, he doesn't speak about his time in Chicago for that reason.
John was in a gang in Chicago, Bun. You know John. You've done it. John was in a gang called the Animals back in the day. He had his own company called Odd Jobs Incorporated, where he and these other hooligans from the north side of Chicago.
They would scam old ladies.
Yeah.
They would do construction.
Well, they would try to do a good job.
Yeah, it seems par for the course.
Yeah, it is. But John won't talk about, like, we ask him about Chicago stuff, and he tries to change. He's basically admitted that there's certain things he can't talk about with Chicago. So he won't even tell us.
Wait.
He's just, let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
Look, that's what he will do right now. If you said, wait, like I would, he won't answer the question. Something, am I lying, Dell?
No, it's completely true. He avoids, he can't remember.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
He feels like, yeah. He's,
because he's in a position where his past could ruin his wife's future. So
wait,
he didn't want to talk about it.
Who do you co-host with, bro?
I'm telling you, I don't 100% know. I don't 100% know. I know he used to be in a
COVID
gang called the Animals.
COVID has changed this show.
Yes.
John,
when he was in Louisiana, they told him his name, Granato, was too ethnic. So South Louisiana turned him into John Grant. John Grant. That's where he met his wife.
Should he have been John Thibodeau? Like, what are they?
I know, Thibodeau.
Louisiana say anything about anybody's last name?
That story? Or did he change it because he had to change
John Grant might be. That may be his backstory from witness protection, to be honest.
So he's Kaiser Soze, basically.
Oh, no. He's 100% Kaiser Soze. He talks about a guy named Mel Murphy who was in the Animals.
That's crawling, a pseudonym.
Crawling through a crawl space to get a gun because he was hiding the gun because the cops were there. And then Mel ended up shooting himself in the leg like Plaxico Burress did back in the day in the club.
And that's the story he allows to be told.
I think Mel Murphy.
Yeah, he allows that.
I think that's his fake name. Like when he goes to like CD motels.
Possibly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
What was Kaiser Soze's name, Kevin Spacey's name when he was Verbal Kent?
Verbal Kent.
John Grant is Verbal Kent. But in real life, when he's done limping and hopping with his right
here,
foot with his Golden Goose shoes on, he's wearing the Golden Goose to throw you off.
Folks, we're talking about a movie called The Usual Suspects, in case anybody here has no frame of
Top 10 for you at all or not? When you told me you've got the Criterion Collection stuff, that's like, okay, that's a different level. Criterion Collection is very serious. But Dell watches, now Dell is a guy that I've leaned into for, like he told me about 000, which have you seen that, Bun?
No, what is it?
Phenomenal show
on Amazon.
Amazon Prime. Phenomenal.
It gives you
tell them a little bit about it.
It gives you the three sides of this multinational drug operation where you get the brokers, which are the Americans, you get the suppliers, which are the Mexicans, and then you get the people it finally gets to are the Italians. And the Italians are infighting. I think in the first episode, someone gets fed to a wild boar or something, or a pig or something.
Oh, it is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
There's one scene where a woman is sitting there between two guys that have been shot in the head as she's negotiating with the cartel.
Yeah, one of the brokers is like sitting there, and on the sides, there are two dead guys on the couch sitting next to her, and she's having a conversation with the new guy in charge about
I'm
what's
next. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. 000. So Dell knows a lot of this. So you do a lot of streaming shows.
Yes.
As well. Are you still doing
it? Oh, yeah. I'm waiting. Personally, for me, there's nothing better that I saw as a television series. Although Succession is a very strong, too.
Mm-hmm.
Succession is an extremely well-acted television show. But nothing to me is better than Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, and another one's coming.
And yeah, season 4, where they're actually going to go against the Nazis.
So I watched it. You told me about it. You know, pandemic time, it's like it's not even real time. I don't know. I watched every single season. And your comments about the sound, I've heard people say they don't like the fact that the soundtrack, it doesn't even represent the time period. That's the brilliance of it.
Yes.
It represents the scene.
It totally carries the tone of the scene.
Of the scene, of the end scene is what it carries, 100%. Or sometimes the beginning.
Look, when you see the faces of these individuals and you hear these very, and it's all British, right? So it's in context, it's still the British notion, right?
Yeah.
And British music has always been like anti-establishment, right? The punk rock stuff. And these guys were obviously anti-establishment. That's why the music fits, because it fits the actions of the characters 100%. In the movie. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back. I want to say this, because you brought up Usual Suspects as a top 10 movie. It's not a top 10 movie to me, but it's a top 10 script. But he actually, so the writer of that is Christopher McQuarrie. Christopher McQuarrie is now like Tom Cruise's co-writer on a lot of these Mission Impossible movies. But his first directorial debut was The Way of the Gun. And The Way of the Gun is a much better movie. And as far as a movie, I don't think it's a better script, but I think he shot the hell out of this movie.
Del, do you watch movies?
The Way of the Gun is Ryan, Philip Bay.
Do you still watch movies?
And Benicio del Toro.
I'm just going to be honest with you.
That's Kidnappers.
Benicio's so good too. But I'll be honest, since I got into series where it's, and I feel bad because Eric Layden is a good friend of mine and he does movies, but he also does series. I mean, he just did Ozark. But it is, it's to the point now where I love the development, the character development, the plot lines, the multiple plot lines series. It's harder for me to watch movies
now. I'm a series person. I like movies, but the one-off aspect of it kind of hurts them with my eyes.
What do you mean?
Because I grew up reading these long epic tale books where there's 3 or 4, maybe 8, depending on the series of books. And it takes you, and you can...
Like Lord of the Rings.
Stuff
Chronicles
like that.
Chronicles of Narnia.
But in Ender's Game... Yep. Stuff like that, sci-fi stuff.
No, Chronicles of Narnia. No.
Yeah, it's 100%.
No, Ender's Game.
Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
I'm telling you right now, Ender's Game was my favorite book as a kid. And
Alice in Wonderland Through the Looking Glass.
Never read it. Watch the book. Watch the movies. Game of Thrones is the other one. A more recent one.
So you read the books before the show?
Yes.
Kudos. That's real.
Lord of the Rings, did
you? That's real.
Yeah.
He read all the Game of Thrones stuff, but you've read a lot of, like, did you think Game of Thrones, the shows were as good as the books?
It's different though, right?
Fire and Ice, isn't that what it's called?
Song of Ice and Fire. Noob. I added that because I knew it would make you laugh. I knew it would make you laugh. The books are better, but I don't like getting into that because I like the show. Yeah. I don't want to get in this back and forth.
Because it always turns into,
But if you read a book, right, the movie's playing in your head as you read it. And whatever someone films is never going to be what you saw in your head if you actually read the book.
Yeah, there are big characters. And the funny thing is, it's not funny. The guy keeps doing other things besides, the thing that made him his money. He hasn't done a book in over a decade. So everyone thinks we're never going to get the end of the series. But there are characters that you didn't get to see. And plus, if you're into that mystical magic stuff, the books were into that because... Spoiler, I guess, if you want to read the books, Catelyn Stark comes back as almost a zombie type character, like the dudes, the Lord of the Light, will bring people back. Catelyn Stark actually gets brought back in the books. She doesn't get brought back in the show, so those type of differences can hit you.
So it's kind of like Marvel comics being translated into
film. It's kind of what it is. So they pick and choose, and plus those dudes want to do a Star Wars series or movies that they never
have to do. You have to lock in on a specific storyline that you can execute properly in terms of translating the script to film. Yeah.
Some things just won't work.
Give people your 5 favorite movies.
Okay, we're going to get weird here for a minute.
When I say favorite, are you willing to watch these over and over and over?
Yes, that's why I said we're going to get weird here. Number one, Beat Street.
Wow.
I don't think.
So there was Beat Street and there was Breakin'.
Yes.
Okay, now I watched them both and I liked.
Breakin's a comedy.
I mean, Breaking is a comedy, but I also love Shaka Khan's music inside of it.
Yeah, but Beat Street is actual legitimate drama.
And you were either a Turbo or an Ozone guy.
The kid dies.
Yeah.
Beat Street actually gets very dark.
A lot more actually hip-hop culture.
Well, it's more well-rounded. It's more representative, whereas Breaking is really just kind of breakdancing with a bit of emceeing and some DJing. But Beat Street really encompasses the whole culture, and it's really showing more of the earlier days of the culture.
Okay,
Not Wild Style.
Line them up real quick. So
Beat Street.
So which bin? You got Beat Street on this in this bin, and you've got in this bin you've got Breaking here and Beat Street here.
Yes.
Which one do you put Goodfellas and which one in Godfather? If you had to,
I wouldn't separate them like that. It would be the Godfather on one side, Once Upon a Time in America on the other side.
Okay.
Abel Ferrara.
Okay.
That's like the one, like, legitimately easy to watch Abel Ferrara.
So you're talking about more easier, like more soft sell. One of them's more authentic, would you say?
One of them is trying to tell a story, and one of them is telling the story they're allowed to tell.
Yeah, so that's probably not fair for me to even put Goodfellas and Godfather are just different area, different types
Godfather,
of mafia
Godfather
stories.
Godfather is trying to be, it's Mario Puzo, mm-hmm. right, who's helping to write the script and all. So it's trying to be as faithful to the book as possible, whereas Goodfellas is one man's recollection of a bunch of stuff happening.
Yeah, it's Henry Hill from Wise Guy is the book. It's a really good book.
Nicholas Pileggi,
yeah. And Nicholas Pileggi tells the story in the book Wise Guy about Henry Hill. And so you do get it from Henry Hill's. But it's the same thing with Goodfellas. I mean, it is adapted from there. What are some other
Number two, Weird Science.
Nice. We're all going to die. Well, what is it? What is it, Chet? Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton's debut.
Pour some out for Bill Paxton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. Legend. Number three.
Kelly LeBrock.
I believe.
Was on a different level at that time. And you had Anthony Michael Hall was in the middle of he was killing it as a young guy. People forget he was on Saturday Night Live before Chris Rock and Pete Davidson. He was the young guy.
It's better than most people's adult acting career. He was really, really good. I mean, he had that. He had 16 Candles. This kid was killing it at the time. Number three. We're at number three now, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Goonies.
I just watched that with my kids the other day. I'm not a Goonies guy, but my wife is. And so she watched it with the kids. And I mean, she was getting into it. And what I found out is if you're really into the Goonies, you're all in. There is no changing. You're either in or you're not in. You're one or the other.
Absolutely. Number four, you guys might not be ready for this. Time Bandits.
You've said this before, Time Bandits before. And that's where Warwick, Warwick is in that, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
Little person. Yes. Why? Now you've told me this privately about Time Bandits that you love. What was it about Time Bandits that you like so much?
It's the first film I watched that I could not figure out. Like it was the one that really like opened my mind. Like that and 2001 Space Odyssey. I had no idea how they filmed. Like I didn't know how they were on the boat and then the boat was a hat on a
giant.
Were
you watching on cable or were you in the theater?
And they were running from God. While the devil was chasing them, like Time Bandits was all over the place, and then Time Bandits actually is my window through Terry Gilliam into Monty Python. So I'm kind of late. I get to Monty Python late.
How does that feel? I've been late to stuff before, and it's okay. It's kind of fun rediscovering in this day and age. You almost can't be late to something. There's too much stuff going on. Right, you're going to be late. I was late to Peaky Blinders. People told me forever to watch. People told me, you're going to love Schitt's Creek. You got to watch Schitt's Creek. I was late to that. Love Schitt's Creek. I don't have a problem with being late to stuff. Like the Monty Python, though, that's different because that's a very specific kind of British comedy.
But
inside British comedy, it's different.
But in Houston, right, growing up on Channel 39 at late night, they would always play Benny Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So Benny Hill came on all the time in Houston. So it wasn't like I didn't have a frame of reference for British humor, but Monty Python itself, right, within the world of British humor, is very specific. You know,
Benny Hill Saturday nights in Los Angeles would come on the local station right around 11 o'clock because that's when they thought they could get away with British women. Maids being stripped of their clothes while Benny Hill, yeah, that
it was hypersexualized for sure, right? And I'm a kid, right? I'm like 8-9 years old watching this stuff late at night when everybody goes to bed, right? I'm up watching late TV, and that what comes on 39 is Benny Hill, And it's literally, like you said, it's women in a dress, and then some old dude snatches the dress off, and then they're just in their pants and they're running around.
He's clutching them.
They're clutching their pearls.
And they're running, and they double speed the runner out because the old man can't really run that fast.
And that's when I learned what tongue-in-cheek meant.
Yeah. So that's interesting. The Time Bandits was an entree into an entire different genre.
And no one else in my life ever saw the movie, so I had no one to talk to.
Did you ever watch either High or Not High, The Wall? Because you just talked about weird stuff happening. The Wall is pretty out there also.
In high school, I went to a mixed high school. And so someone convinced me to take mushrooms and try to watch The Wall. And
that's too much. What about Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange? Yes, absolutely.
I figured you would like Clockwork Orange. That's a heavy show. Yeah. It depends on.
I didn't understand it. Like
I snuck in when I was 12. That's too heavy when
you're
12.
I still, at 19, couldn't really grasp like the totality of it.
The Wall they showed in high school to us on a sub day. The sub was like, y'all watching this crazy movie. And then I watched Clockwork Orange freshman year in college. It was part of a film class. And the teacher was like, this is what you're watching. You're going to watch this movie, and then we obviously have your discussion about it. I didn't really understand it either. I just remember, what was the term? Ultraviolence was what they said? Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I think we're going to – yeah, let's just combine breaks. Let's run and move it to that because I want to keep this going. What was your number five film?
Number five is probably going to be some –
these are not mainstream films. I mean, at the time, Weird Science is kind of mainstream with the Oingo Boingo soundtrack, which is really good.
It's not. It probably wouldn't be on many people's top five, but it doesn't matter. It's your top five.
No.
And I would have to say number five would probably be somewhere between Goodfellas and Scarface, based on the ability to consistently watch these movies over and over again.
What's the best Al Pacino? When is prime Al Pacino for you?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because it's a very different Pacino over three decades.
I don't want to be like, it's not that. It's not that. Heat, maybe.
I love Heat, Pacino. Maybe Heat. To me, still is Pacino and De Niro, what they were older at that time, but what they were actually Tom Brady. Like, they were still very much, that movie, you caught Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, where you thought, okay, Robert De Niro's done a bunch of movies, but De Niro was still, he hadn't gone to analyze this, analyze that, the Fockers. This was like, he was in his bag in Heat, and so was Al Pacino. And then, of course, the scene, which I don't think they were together, right? Isn't that
No, they were together in the restaurant.
They were together, okay. That was the only time they were together?
The only time they've ever shared.
So they were for sure in the same scene together.
Yes.
Okay.
So they weren't together in The Irishman ever? They weren't ever on
the but the Heat was the first.
No,
one.
Yeah, it was the first time.
Okay, because of the Godfather 2 context, right?
But Heat to me, the bank, and I'm not an action movie guy, but the Heat, the bank scene, to me is still the gold standard for that in Hotel Rwanda. The first like 45 minutes of the movie, if you want to, and also there's like a few of these movies. Hotel Rwanda, the first 40 minutes is so intense. The opening scene of Saving Private Ryan,
obviously,
where you just can't, like, it is super intense. The Heat bank scene, but I'm trying to think of scenes. Also, Inglourious Basterds, where they're downstairs in the basement and they're trying not to be found out. And his dialect is off just slightly.
He also throws up the wrong version of the German three. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what
he does.
Yeah,
like
he ordered three shots like this.
And
with the
like Dirk
with the index,
threes,
the middle finger, and the ring
he
finger.
He didn't do the German
but
way.
German three starts with one. One is the thumb. It's not the index. American three, one is the index.
So Delia, as somebody who watches movies and shows, are you a? I want to bring it back to sports in a second, but are you a Tarantino fan? I would never even gotten into it with you.
I am not the obsessed person that some people are. I enjoy his movies. I think they're entertaining. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was like, okay, sure. Entertaining, fine. I'm not locked in like other people are.
That's more of an L.A. love story, though. You kind of have to have been in L.A. growing up at that time to really appreciate.
Yeah, the Manson stuff that went on. And even more than that, obviously, all of Tarantino's movies expand. But to me, like, I know it almost feels cliche, but Pulp Fiction, to me, that was just game-changing. In my 20s, to watch that were the different, the varied storylines, the soundtrack that he, his soundtracks are amazing. It oh, really introduced me to Jungle Boogie. I loved Kool & Gang. I didn't even know Jungle Boogie. And I grew up listening to Magic 102. I listened to Magic 102 growing up, Jungle and I didn't know Boogie. Jungle Boogie, really. But I knew some Al Green. I knew a lot of the other. But his adherence to a certain type of sound and soundtrack, I would imagine that you love Tarantino because of what he...
The cultural craft, cues. It's yes. The cultural cues for me,
yes.
For Quentin Tarantino, right? Mm-hmm. He tries to be... It's almost anal to the point of how serious he wants to, how sincere he wants to be to the time. And that's why people get uncomfortable with Tarantino scripts,
mm-hmm.
because he's being very honest about the terminology that people used and how they used it and who used it.
You have a problem with, so Tarantino, people say Tarantino couldn't do some of his, because he uses the N-word in several of his scripts when he wants, but I'm always, you know, it's an art standpoint. It is he is trying to create. I think it's a non-starter.
His reality, right? Because I've seen Spike Lee have issues with Quentin Tarantino in the past, mm-hmm. for the use of the N-word. Samuel Jackson works extensively with Spike Lee and Quentin Tarantino.
Both, right.
And I think that if Samuel L. Jackson felt that Tarantino was just using it for shock factor, he wouldn't embrace it.
Absolutely
not. But you can't make Django without the house guy, right? You can't make that movie without Samuel Jackson portraying that character.
His character should have won an Oscar.
It's uncomfortable to see these black perspectives from a white mind. That can become, and vice versa, right? Sometimes black people have issues when a black story is told and a white person is made to be the hero of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand culturally how people can become uncomfortable with these things. But at the end of the day, right, it results in captivating performances and really, really good entertainment. It can make you uncomfortable, but good art is supposed to make you uncomfortable point.
But you're an artist, and I know both of you, we can have this conversation, but this is one of my issues with where we're going culturally, is that you've got to be able to expand into and appreciate from a cultural standpoint and appreciate people attempting to create art that is... Well, that is uncomfortable. We don't like to be uncomfortable at all anymore. And there was a time where that's what punk rock was supposed to make you uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And I have a much greater appreciation now. When some kid named DJ Ramirez came to my high school from California, and he had Anarchy, and he was Dead Kennedys and Sex Pistols and Dead Kennedys,
Danzig,
and Black Flag and all that. I was like, Anarchy? Who would want Anarchy? This is terrible. Punk rock, this is terrible. You guys beat each other. But it was that was what you thought punk was with the first time you saw mosh pits and stuff like that. But I do think that getting past what your perceptions are and being able to immerse yourself in someone else's culture, even if for a little bit, is how you, if the goal is to unite and to have a truly expansive culture that takes from, you know, the true melting pot, if that is your goal. I felt like we were doing it better in the 90s and 2000s than we do it right now, in terms of the attempt to get into and bring different cultures. Now, I was into hip-hop culture, but I was also into counterculture. But I wasn't actively like punk rock counterculture or getting into trouble when I was youth. I observed and appreciated counterculture.
I think the difference, Lance, is that nowadays people tend to do things just to let people see them do it, right? Like, people don't go to concerts to see the concert. I had a friend write a story about this a couple of years ago. It's like, people don't go to concerts to actually watch concerts anymore. They go to concerts to let people know they were at the concert.
Not you, Del. You don't post anything. You go to concerts still, don't you?
Yeah, and I don't care to share my experiences because it's my experience.
But you're
not. What you do with Paramore is your business.
No, what I do with Dance Gavin Dazin is my business.
Okay.
But you're not a... You've never been a, hey, look at this picture of the chicken sandwich I'm having.
No.
Spicy chicken sandwich.
That would be me.
No, I don't do that.
We live in that world.
But back then, no one was really watching, right? No one was really watching, and no one really cared what was happening over there.
The outside forces didn't care
They didn't give it any validity, and they didn't give it any weight.
No.
Right? It was like, well, this is just what those weirdos are doing over there, and the weirdos will always be secluded in their little holes.
That's what it was.
Right.
And it's then, when it gets outside of the little walls.
Well, the world, we started to figure out how weird everybody else in the world was. And how to connect with them. And that's all that social media does now. That's why everybody seems, it doesn't matter what people say or think or view, how they look at the world, there's a support system.
If you didn't have to be on social media, would you be?
No.
I wouldn't either. Would you, Dale?
I fought against it. For
I'm
a very
not
long.
On it. You I only have Twitter because of the show. I wouldn't.
Yeah, but you get information from there. It is an information source
for the show or the radio. But as far
as a Heat fan, you don't like it.
For what?
As a Dolphin fan, well, you can keep track of beat writers.
I'm on it as far as you know information, but I am not tweeting about it. Or
no,
I wouldn't
you
tweet
don't
if
even
it wasn't.
Text back.
No, I don't like you.
You're literally the most antisocial person well, I know. You're
what
a
do you
nihilist.
What do you want me to text you back about?
Just something to give me, make me feel good about myself, give me a little bit more security
See,
about
that's
myself.
The problem. That's the problem.
Why do you need that's my? Problem, why do you need
you
me to make you feel good?
Because I do.
You
have a family.
I need you to be solid in yourself.
I want to be, but if I get somebody who like, and then I like have little teaser texts like, "Hey, Dell,
that's
do
what
you
I'm
think
trying
the Dolphins
to avoid.
Will trade
you
for know, the first pick."
You know that you meet new people and you get the number, whether through work or otherwise, and you respond a couple times, and they think, "Hey, it's." Was full go. Let me text them about
you
everything.
And I are friends.
I don't want that.
9:25 here on the bench.
There are boundaries.
Me and my good friends, Bun B and Del Ololo.
One of us friends. Is your friend. It ain't me.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, you guys are calling in. Glad to see this. I didn't even call for it, but we got questions for Bun movie questions. See, sure. I wanted to hit people to this because I know you and I have had long-form discussions about movies. I wanted other people to know that you... like can get into these deep discussions. Before we get to the phones, you and I were talking about this. You hit me to something that I have never heard before, and I'll see if Dell's ever heard this. There is a movie that you said I would never believe that is like a top five for black people, and I said, okay, I have no idea what this is going to be.
Tombstone.
Yes.
Tombstone is huge.
What do you mean, yes?
You didn't know?
No, I didn't know that.
So you're not part of the culture.
I am kind
pretending.
Of part of the culture. I'm learning. I'm growing. I'm doing the work.
What's there not to like about Tombstone?
Tombstone's like, I like Tombstone. And here's the perfect way to put it. Tombstone is like a Western Scarface.
That's pretty good.
It's like a Western version of Scarface. Like it's very, and not in the sense of the tale of Scarface, but more about the gratuitous violence.
And who did you love most in Tombstone?
Val Kilmer. Yeah. But I mean, I was a big Val Kilmer fan from Top Secret on up. Like, Val Kilmer is another guy. We talked about guys that don't get their credit. Have you seen the Val
Russell?
Have you seen the Val Kilmer "I Am Val" documentary?
That is so sad.
I broke my heart, bro. Like,
I had no idea he was going through that. Have you seen that, Dale? I couldn't watch all of it. I stopped halfway through. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It is rough to see someone so who was documenting all the youth and virility of his life.
He's got all of this.
And then just to see this, crazy sharp decline.
It's a juxtaposition of who he was and who he is now. He can't speak like hardly anymore. He
had one of the most beautiful voices, right? Like Val Kilmer as Jim Morrison.
Mm.
You know, I mean, singing too, right? Not just acting.
I personally like singing the song. I like the movie. Yeah, he sang his own.
And
songs.
Ray and the guys were like, "We're good with this." Like Ray Manzarek was like, "I'm good."
Is that
with
the
it.
Director?
No, he's the partner. He was the other guy in the Doors.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm not a Doors guy, but I became a fan of the music after I watched the. My mom didn't grow up on the Doors, so I didn't grow up on the Doors. I grew up on Sam Cooke, not the Doors. I listened to it. I watched.
But
the,
you didn't know about Tombstone. But he grew up on Sam Cooke.
Look, you can't listen.
I'm
to
I'm telling
Lance.
You, I can sing you anything you from Sam Cooke.
Here's what I
knew
do.
About.
How
White,
did you miss Tombstone?
I knew about White Club Sam Cooke and also Gospel.
The
Sam
problem
Cooke
with you
at
like,
a young age.
You like a good white bummer movie, don't you? Like those movies that make white people sad.
Wait! I like Tombstone. I didn't know it was big in the black community.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's the Kramer versus Kramer kind of.
He
guy.
Definitely.
No,
is.
I did Par- not like Kramer.
I'm gonna make a very small gesture right now.
Ordinary people.
I'm gonna make a very small gesture, but it's gonna make profound ramifications in this room. I'm going to scoot 1 inch closer to Dell.
I win.
I'm going to scoot one.
We didn't know. See,
I thought he would scoot
an inch closer to me.
I'm usually only here for 20, 30 minutes, maybe an hour. T- took an hour and 35 minutes. I'm with Dell.
Okay. You so know Dell what? Now, all he did was he just said, oh, yeah, Bun, yeah, we like Tombstone, not, just to try to win you over.
No.
We like each other because we don't like anybody. That's the beauty
that's
of
the other
you
thing
found
too.
That out during the break. That's real. It's I'm not just, a bit.
You are an ordinary people person, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I didn't like any of that stuff. Steel Magnolias, Fried Green Tomatoes.
That's a lie.
Ordinary People. I didn't like those bummer shows. I liked the John Hughes movies. They were fine. I like Blood In, Blood. This is what I like. Goodfellas, Blood In, Blood Out, American Me. I like Mexican prison movies. I like funny. I like The Fish Called Wanda because John Cleese. That was when I first got a real taste of how brilliant the subtlety of John Cleese's humor was.
I'll be very honest. I was, after Trading Spaces, I was watching anything Jamie Lee Curtis was in.
Now, just for to me, see if she it was bust perfect. Him out. That for was, me, it was perfect. And also, yeah, Trading been, Places. But what about perfect when she's doing the aerobic stuff? And
you must have forgotten in Trading Places, she literally, she busts
you
them out.
It? No, no, I didn't forget.
I'm almost certain that was like the first movie breast I saw.
Oh, no, no. Well, that and Porky's. But that's how they did it in the 80s. They introduced
which
you.
Which was first?
After 10 o'clock. I think Porky's was after Trading Places. And Trading Places was 82,
Porky's
Eddie
was
Murphy.
81.
Oh, Porky's was first.
Can really? Crawl.
That was a game
what was
changer.
What was her thing in that movie? She was really
screamer.
Loud.
Screamer. Yeah, the screamer really in the room. Yeah, yeah.
Let's which, get, which she kind of carried I mean, that on it, later. You know.
It is what it is. Let's get Javon in here. What's going on, Javon? Do we have him up?
Chick is not the finger licking. Hey, man, that verse on Murder, first off, that's the greatest of all time.
Thank
Didn't you.
You
agree, Dale? And, hey, just wanted to ask you a question, man. You know, I always felt like Hollywood's done a bad job of kind of, you know, showing the culture of Houston. I would love to see like a DJ's Crew SUC type buyout, you know, something like Straight Outta Compton. If there was a UGK buyout, which I would love to see, who would you get to play Bun B and Pimp C, and who would you want to produce it?
Okay, so I've always felt, and I'll be very honest, that any capable actor can play Bun B, right? I don't think it takes a huge stretch of the humanity of the. It's not going to take a lot for somebody to play a 5'9" fat dude. That's not good. I'm very uncompelling as a person. That's not going to be a big deal. The idea of someone being able to capture Pimp C is the thing that
be hard.
Yeah, I don't think it's impossible, and I've talked to different people about it. We've discussed this. My dream producer would be someone who actually knows the group, right, who actually grew up as a fan of the group, because you can't impress upon people who Pimp C was. They either know or they don't. So you'd have to have a young, like a Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx has a production company right now, and he's from Texas, right? So someone like that would understand it. Cedric the Entertainer.
What about those two different
company.
Things, though? If they did a UGK, you got to go all the way back to Port Arthur.
I don't think
and
it's a movie.
Forward.
That's the thing. I don't think UGK story is a movie.
What is
I
it?
Think it's a TV. I think it's a series.
A series?
Yeah.
Well, then is it a docuseries or a series?
No,
you don't
no.
Have enough footage.
No, no. It would be closer to like the Wu-Tang.
Okay. And so then what would be better then? Well, that's not a fair question. Those are two separate things because he talked about capturing Houston. Houston's more than UGK, all respect to
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
but
no, and again, our story starts in Port Arthur, right? But Houston would definitely be the backdrop to the UGK story because mm-hmm. everything musically that happens to UGK happens from Houston.
So could the Houston's, would the Houston thing
But it would also encompass, like the UGK story would also encompass pieces of Rap-A-Lot, pieces of
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it would
that would happen.
And would it cut off, like when would the show cut off? Because some people say, well, there hasn't been an expansive enough robust enough musical revolution, a second one from Houston rap. It's the OGs who carried it for a long time and still do. There's not
the well. There's the initial, like, and then there's the resurgence, right?
Right, so, but the resurgence. You're not talking about guys who like Travis and Megan who they're gone.
Well, look, we got a lot. Look, this last. Well, no, it was Monday. Monday was the 30-year anniversary of our first release, The Southern Way.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a 30-year legacy. We got a lot to talk about.
Lance
we get
is already
Travis
looking
Scott.
At season six. What's the storyline in season six?
I know.
My grandkids, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let me let's get some of these other calls in. Let's get Carlos in. What's up, Carlos?
Hey, good morning.
How you doing?
Morning, guys.
Good morning, Carlos.
Hey, Bum B, I'm a huge, huge fan. Graduated in 98, so UGK is a lot, is my soundtrack to my life.
Thank
but
you.
But I want to ask you that, you know, you, as me as an ex-knucklehead, went back to school, got me a degree in safety, and I'm a safety manager in Austin here. With a lot of things you got going on now with the restaurant, everything you're doing now, when you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing that goes through your mind to conquer the day, and what's your ambition? I mean, you know, trying to conquer all your ambitions.
That's a great question, man, actually.
How do you win the day?
And thank you for tuning in from Austin on behalf of the show.
Shout
thank
out.
You for tuning in
yeah,
from Austin.
The app.
I wake up in the morning. The first thing I do is I'm happy to be out of that dream. I have very weird dreams. So I'm usually happy to get out of the dream.
You take melatonin to help you sleep or no?
No.
I don't like it.
I don't take anything to go to sleep, and I don't drink coffee to wake up.
Ooh. You know?
But I will say when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I think about is how can I get through this day? Like, I don't know what the day consists of. I just want to know how can I get through this day.
You're game planning, easy. Getting through it?
Yes.
Because so it's not about crushing the day. It's about-
No, because I'm married, right? So I'm going to wake up, and before I have any personal or business obligations, my wife's going to throw a monkey wrench at any plan I got. My wife is the kind of person that, you know, that's why I have to cut my ringer off sometime. My wife has been known to call me and ask me to stop at the grocery store on the way home in the middle of, like, national television interviews and stuff like that. So, you know, my professional life never
me and
takes
Del are pre- the same.
My professional no. life never takes precedent over my personal life. So no matter what I'm doing,
did
like,
it at
professionally,
one point?
Not since I've been with my wife.
Okay, that's good.
No,
because most people have that issue at some point in their life where the you got to balance the two, and it's easy to let the professional take over the personal.
Well, if you don't have anybody, like if you're a single man, there's
and
no
Dale
balance.
Doesn't have anybody
right?
who likes him.
It's just the chick, you know, fine. The chick's got to get out of the room before you leave. That's yeah. when you're single. That's it.
You like
know,
that, Dale? Is that the way you like it?
Dale no. lets him stay over.
No, I'm not a hey, it's time for you to go type. No,
I left some breakfast on the stove.
That's the personality you give off.
I don't like
that's
you.
Your vibe.
I don't like you. There's
it's time
difference.
For you to go is your vibe.
When I'm
that's your whole
when
your
I,
whole meme.
When I'm in the midst of trying to impress someone on multiple levels, I'm not going to be who I am with you. I don't care what you think of me.
That's true.
Yeah, there's a difference.
You really don't.
Yeah.
Before I'm not going to say who's who, but I'm getting a lot of Matt Lauer and Curry.
He's Lauer.
Real quick, you have the office with the lock on it. I'm not Lauer.
I know we're just running a little bit late, but real quick before I get to this message, I take it back. Lazy J, you can wait. We'll get to you.
Really
do you
can.
Think Lazy J is going to ask a real question, Del?
He's chilling. Lazy well, J's chilling. I know he'll know. Wait. He'll wait.
Lazy J will
it's
wait.
It's Bun, so he might ask a real question.
Because if it were, he's going to take a shot at you.
Yeah.
And then he'll ask a question.
Certainly.
Maybe. All right.
When I'm done with this show today, I'm going to have a Lazy J myself. So,
so there is, we know, we understand Lazy J. I want to tell you about SiteJab.com. That's another J, SiteJab. Hector Garcia, his entire crew from the city of Houston, 20 years plus in building websites. And, you know, the beginning stages of a website, we all recognize the websites that have been around since, like, 2004. There's a very distinct difference. What SiteJab does is they're more than a website development team. They are a brand development team, a production company, website development, e-commerce integration and development. What they want to do is create a website that is truly an interactive billboard for your an experiential billboard for your website or for your company so that people get immersed in who you are, what you are in a very quick way online, get to the information that they need without going through a bunch of clicks, and then create different content and videos and opportunities to turn those eyes into business leads and turn it into real money. Man, at the end of the day, your competitors are doing this, and if you're not doing this, you're going to get rolled, and that's the way it is. So you got to be at your very best, and that's why you need to call my friends Hector and his entire crew at SiteJab. Go to SiteJab.com to set up your free consultation, SiteJab.com.
ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, final segment here. If you guys want to jump in real quick, you can. I can't promise we'll get you on, but we'll try. We already had Carlos on. Actually, you've already closed
Noah's
down
had
the
enough.
Phone lines.
He's had enough Noah of the
said,
phones.
That's enough. He's an intern. He knows how to close these line down.
Yeah, because he doesn't have an intern himself. He's like, I'm not doing all that.
Let me get Lazy. Let's just see if Lazy J is being legit. Let's get Lazy J in right now.
My
What's
Lazy
up, Lazy J?
Oh,
okay. No, it's a different Lazy J.
Oh, my bad.
Not afternoon Lazy J.
Hey.
Far less fun Lazy J.
Good morning, fellas. How y'all? Good morning, fellas. How y'all doing? Bun B, man. Legend, bro. But I got a bone to pick with you, bro.
Here we go.
Uh-oh, he got
hey,
a bone
man,
to pick.
I've been in the,
it's because I scooted closer to you, Dale. Let me get back.
hey, man. My first job was at Foot Locker back in 01, man. So I'm 21 plus years in the sneaker collecting game, bro. And I feel like, man, I know you OG in it, but I feel like, man, you can do more for the city, man, as far as us sneaker collectors, man. And you got the higher powers, man. You can definitely talk to them about us getting maybe like a Nike town here in Houston. We're the fourth largest city, man. Anything that's limited, you know that, besides the mom and pop here in Houston. We don't get enough Foot Locker like L.A. or New York. Like, come on, man. I feel like you can do more for the community, man.
He said, Lazy J saying you put on for your city to an extent.
Yeah, you're like. Like, there's a trailer for the new Batman where this woman walks up.
I'm open to constructive criticism. I'm open.
This woman walks up to the Bruce Wayne and goes, you don't do enough philanthropy. This is what Lazy J's doing to you. Get us more shoes.
Now, hold on a second. We haven't even gotten into it, but you are part of the Sneaker Summit.
Yeah.
I know you're actively involved. I see all the shoes. I mean, you're actively involved with different groups.
I understand what Lazy J is saying.
What's he saying?
Lazy J is saying that basically we need to get more sneakers to Houston.
Is he right?
Yeah, we know. Well, look, first of all, Houston is the number one buyer of Jordan shoes in the country. Like, Chicago doesn't buy more Jordans.
Houston is?
Yes.
Really?
Has been for many years.
Is this a known thing with sneakerheads?
It's a known thing with retail.
Okay.
Right? I don't know if the average consumer would know that. Right? So we get, as opposed to other cities, a high number of shoe allotment in the city. But when it comes to like Nike towns, it's like, he's like, why don't we have a Nike town? It gets weird with accounts. So Nike knows everywhere in Houston that sells Nike, and they're not prone to putting one account up against another.
So they're not going to cannibalize.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that being said, they will still have Finish Line next to, you know, Foot Action, next to Foot Locker, next to Chic, you know, and all of these other things. But that's Nike Town is Nike, right? So it's like them selling their own product. So it gets different, right? Like, you could go to a polo store and buy a polo. You could also go to Macy's or Dillard's and buy a polo, right? But polo itself, when you go in the gallery and you see polo, it's built out in a way that is not necessarily in competition with Dillard's or, you know, they're not selling the $100 polos in the Ralph Lauren store. You know, they're selling purple,
it's like
brand, purple label
stuff.
Yeah,
baiting
so,
away.
But yeah, but look, sneakerheads are never happy because every year there's more sneakerheads, but there's never more sneakers, and that's Lazy J's issue.
Well, people
it's
just
the fact,
want the
and
most-
Lazy J and Lazy J knows that I have a connection to Nike, but Lazy J should also know that I have no power.
No power.
I have no say.
I would rather have no power and get the shoes you get. Honestly, if you said, would you like power and no shoes or no power and shoes? I'm a no power and shoes guy. I'll let you know now.
I just left Holbox, Mexico. Most of you listening will not know where that
what
is.
What is it?
I'm not going to get it to you. You got to Google it.
Holbox?
You got to look for it like I found it.
Okay.
Right? And so we went. My wife and I went.
You were in Mexico.
Yes, it's okay. In Mexico. And it's super, like, there's no paved roads in Holbox. Right? And so I asked my wife, I said, Would you rather be a millionaire in New York? You could never go on a beach again. Or could you live off of like 40 grand in this little fishing village and never go back to the big city?
Is it a really nice place? Like, did you?
I take the village.
I'm looking at it right now.
It was
now.
That nice?
I take the village.
You already do take that. You're already in League City.
Well, League City.
In a way,
not,
you're in Holbox.
It's not the beach.
It's not Holbox. League City is not Holbox.
In a way, for you,
in a way, not at all.
And that's an island.
Yes, I would take the island.
It's Isla Holbox. So it's an Holbox, actually, is how they pronounce it. But it's an island.
If for people,
Holbox?
Holbox. If you're looking to look it up.
So
I'm literally giving away paradise right now.
How did you find out about it?
A friend of mine told me about it. And we were all supposed to go on a group trip The wife and I caught COVID, so we couldn't take the trip.
So you'd rather be give away all the other stuff just to live that life.
The quality, the dogs on this island have a better quality.
Have
of
you?
Life
are you? If you're wow. Look at,
I realize that dogs in America, and this is going to be very crazy. They are not allowed to be dogs.
No, because they're pets.
They're pets.
Yeah,
the dogs in Mexico are they're pets, but they're not caged.
They roam.
They're not chained.
Well, are they they're still not, at a house, though?
No, no. They're just roaming around the island.
You're talking about feral dogs.
Though. No. These dogs have homes and
they
owners.
Come home.
Oh, okay. So they're domesticated.
Yeah. So, but like they were explaining
they're
to
like
me.
They're like farm dogs.
Well, they like they say, look, everybody knows these dogs. We see these dogs every day. We know who's owner of every dog you see. These are not random dogs that someone had and then just gave away or street dogs making babies. These are all personal dogs. This is also that's somebody's dog. I know whose dog that is. That's somebody's dog. I know whose dog that is. But they're allowed to roam freely and be animals. They're not possessions in that way.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't even know. Well, my grandparents had dogs. One of my grandparents had a farm in Kansas, and they had dogs. And that's what it is. You let them out, and then they come back. That's just it is what
but
it
that's
is.
That's the thing. I don't think these dogs ever go in that sense. They're right. Just out.
They're always out.
Yeah.
So do you, before we let you go, here's a question for both. I know Dell's answer because we talked about it at the time. It's in the middle of a pandemic. The Last Dance came out. And I want to bring it back to this because this is a final thing that is sports. So I can actually say when I write off my tax, I can say we talk sports. Did you like how did you like as a fan of movies, as a fan of television, of cinema, of documentaries, storytelling, and of sports. What did you think? I've never asked you this of The Last Dance, of the story of Jordan told through kind of the lens of Jordan's approval.
I thought it was amazing, purely based on the fact that there was all of this Michael Jordan, one of the most visible, known, respected athletes in the world, that they literally had hundreds of hours of footage on Michael Jordan.
Shocking to me.
And just sitting in a warehouse somewhere. One of the most visible sports icons, faces, product promoters, you name it, Michael Jordan's there, right? And there was hundreds, not like just, you know, an interview. Or,
no, behind
you know,
the scenes
a couple of
stuff.
Meetings. Like
the guy, Jordan shooting dice. Who taped Jordan shooting dice against the guy who was the security guard?
Yeah, throwing
guard
the quarters
guy.
And all that. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean.
These, yeah, it was throwing. They were pitching pennies.
Yeah.
Not shooting dice.
But still, I mean, just the fact that all of this, right, extensive, and like real footage, like this is these guys back, you know, they're in a locker room, they're on the court side, they're in real world, they're at practice, they're at the Olympics, all of this stuff going on, and it was just sitting there. My problem with it was like, why did it take so long for us to see this? Did it literally have to happen like this so that we could properly put everything
Jordan
in perspective?
I think Jordan has been sitting on it waiting for the right time, and it was the right time. We got to break it right here. Vanessa and Gallant are coming up. I do want to mention, make sure you check out Bun B. March 11th, is that the H-Town takeover?
March 11th, Black Heritage Day, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Don't forget the Trill Burgers.
Trill Burgers will start Monday. The rodeo opens Monday. Trill Burgers will be on Restaurant Row right as soon as you come in through the Kirby Street entrance, 10 to 9 every day.
Dale,
and I'll
be
there at 10 Monday to open it. So meet me there.
And don't forget, you go make sure and check out all the concert with all the Houston legends. Dale, do you have anything you want to promote on Sports Map or maybe just you with, you know, your Instagram?
Any Canadian women on tour we should know about?
Yeah, go to NFL.com and check out Lance Erlines.
All right, that's going to wrap it up, guys.
What?
No,
I can't promote
don't look
you?
At my mock draft. Nope. I already get enough crap from my mock draft. Don't let Dell forget it, Dell.
That
Thanks.
Was a backhanded compliment.
That was very backhanded.
Check it out. Sure,
only
screwed your team over. Go check it out.
So thanks to Dell for coming in this week. T-Mac from the New York Giants is listening in and said, awesome segment. We've had a lot of good ones. If you missed any of it, check it out on ESPN975.com. Go to the podcast and listen to the entire thing. For Dell, for Bun, I'm Lance. Thank you to Noah for doing mostly a good job today. Just one major slip up.
That one's on me.
Just one major slip up, but that's okay. You live, you learn. Hey, Jalen Green sometimes going to go 4 for 19. That's going to happen.
Sometimes.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save